Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue until 2 o'clock this afternoon here on AM 820 WNYC. If you want to listen to the Leonard Lopate show, it is going on as usual on 93.9 right now, but because of the momentous events of the day, we're continuing post-election coverage here on AM 820. And if you haven't heard, John Kerry has called President Bush to concede the election, according to all the major news organizations, and John Kerry will make a statement at 1 o'clock this afternoon, which we will, of course, carry live. We're going to speak in a minute. No, we're going to speak now with Bill de Blasio. He was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager in her U.S. Senate race in New York in 2000. He was John Edwards' campaign manager when he was running for president in the primaries. He's a city councilman from Brooklyn. And Bill de Blasio, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me. And I was John Edwards' campaign chair for New York only.
For New York only, forgive me. And so what happened?
Well, yeah, a lot of things happened. I think that one of the big stories here is that both parties did a very good job of turning out their vote. And I think the Republicans did a better job. And that's an evolution for the Republican side to really bring out their base in such a systematic fashion.
The turnout question is a fascinating one because most people assumed that the larger the turnout, the better it was going to be for Kerry. And if the turnout, which was 106 million total voters in 2000, approached 120 million yesterday, that almost certainly Kerry would win. And the turnout, I didn't see the final number, but apparently it was right about 120 million, and Kerry lost.
Well, I think there was an assumption in that, sort of the traditional assumption, that Democrats were the only side that historically didn't turn out, and if you had that organization, you know, you would level the playing field and then surpass it. I think the reality today is Democrats still are harder to turn out by and large. Both sides did a lot of hard work, a lot of more systematic work than ever before. I think Democrats still fell a little bit short, and I think that there is a silver lining in this, in the sense there is still much more of a Democratic vote to be turned out in the future. I honestly believe that the 527s and the other organizations that emerged for this cycle will play a big role going forward. So the glass half full here is I think we've only begun to figure out how to get our vote out. There's much more to tap.
Who among Democrats or potential Democratic voters did not vote yesterday? Any idea?
Well, yeah, I think one of the things we have to come to grips with here is sort of the economics of politics, and we're still kind of not acknowledging it. I think the reality is that we're still not getting to folks who are feeling the negative effects of the economy and are most economically insecure. We made progress this time, but we're not getting as far as we need to. I think that what happened with the Republican vote was in many cases, more middle-class folks, many of them, for example, fundamentalist Christian or other categories, but folks who had some economic interest in the status quo and were mobilized for the first time. I think Democrats still have to go a lot farther in terms of getting folks who feel some level of disenfranchisement.
A lot of the talk this morning has been about this exit poll finding that moral values were the number one issue to more voters than any other single issue. 22% of voters said moral values was their most important issue. The next one was the economy. 20% of voters said that. Then terrorism, 19% of voters said that. And among those who listed moral values as their biggest issue, 80% of those people voted for President Bush. Does that indicate some kind of change that needs to be made in the way Democrats run presidential elections or the candidates they put up?
Yeah, I think it does. I think the fact is that this is not a new phenomenon. I think I am not a fan of the Democratic Leadership Council, but I think they did help the Democratic Party understand during the 1980s in particular that there were some important arguments that had to be made.
And that's the centrist arm of the Democratic Party.
Correct. And I think that they did help people understand that we had a growing number of folks, whether you call them Reagan Democrats, whatever you want to call them, who were not connecting with the Democrats as much on the economic message, and that there were cultural issues that we needed to address more squarely. But I do think where the Democratic Leadership Council's analysis has fallen down, and I think something we have to do much better on, is getting back to what's strong about our economic message. I think one of the failings this year was that the Democratic Party tried to win this election on George Bush's playing field, which was national security issues. And, you know, I hearken back to the famous James Carville line in 1992, it's the economy, stupid. I mean, we could have won this on a message level, I think, on the economy and on health care. And I think going forward, if we're going to overcome sort of some of the cultural issue disadvantages, if you will, it is in part by getting back to a clearer and more consistent message and pattern of practice on economic issues.
Bill de Blasio is my guest. He was John Edwards' campaign manager during his presidential primary run in New York State, and he's a city councilman from Brooklyn. We can take a few phone calls for him. I guess Democrats call in and talk about what John Kerry's loss should signal for the Democratic Party. 212-267-WNYC, 267-9692. And, Bill, what do you think happens to our national politics now? We are getting so many angry and depressed calls from Democrats here in the blue state of New York and the blue state of New Jersey, as you might imagine. What happens to national politics now? What is a Bush administration that doesn't have to worry about reelection and with a Republican Congress to you?
Well, I think people should not assume the sky is falling here. There's a lot of factors here to keep in mind. For one thing, this forces a leadership change on the Democratic Party that probably desperately needed. I think that the age of Dick Gephardt and Tom Daschle is over, and we needed that age to be over, sadly enough, to come up with a sharper message and a clearer, particularly on the economic issues, a clearer appeal. I think the emergence of the 527th and the turnout apparatus, the fact that we roughly stayed in the ballgame on fundraising on the national level, which is something John Kerry deserves a lot of credit for, has changed the playing field in some ways that really, in my view, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. So there are some reasons to realize that we can pull this together for the future. But clearly, at the same time, there is the threat of a much more aggressive conservative agenda. I would remind everyone that although the popular vote was decisive for the president, if you had shifted 100,000 votes in Ohio, the outcome would have been the other way. So this was not by any means a blowout election. This was not by any means a profound national mandate for conservatives.
Well, that's easy to say, but we see how much President Bush governed even after the 2000 election as if he had a mandate, and now he's got a larger majority in both the House and the Senate.
Yeah, but again, I would caution, just look at the numbers, look at the states. I mean, basically the states stayed the same as they did 4 years ago, only a handful shifted, and in those cases by very small numbers. It's clearly an extraordinarily divided nation. I think the president's folks, and they've been signaling it this morning, understand that they've got to find something of a common ground. Bluntly, I'm sure they're concerned about Jeb Bush's future, too. And, they cannot afford to allow this level of polarization. It almost got out of hand for them. I mean, these last few days, this thing could have gone either way. And I think there are some lessons here that Democrats have learned that could allow for a stronger message and operation in the future. But by no means is it so clear that the polarizing effect of some of the more radical Republican policies of these last few years is a good prescription for the Republican future.
Let's take a phone call. Harold in Queens, you're on WNYC.
Is this the Harold?
Yes, you.
Oh, good morning. I would like to talk about something that no one talks about, and that's that the Democrats have been in a hole since 30 years ago when President Johnson signed the civil rights legislation and said, this will destroy the Democratic Party. And it has.
Are you suggesting that he shouldn't have signed the civil rights
legislation? No. I'm saying it was done, and we are seeing the effects of it. Now, I'm old enough to remember when the Solid South meant that the South was all Democratic. They still resented the Civil War. Once that legislation was signed, now the Solid South is Republican. Mm-hmm. And nobody talks about how when Nixon started his Southern strategy. He knew what he was doing.
And Bill de Blasio, he's not the first caller to raise the notion today that the Civil War is not over.
Well, look, I think that it's very clear that the Southern strategy that Nixon put in place, and by the way, after the stunning defeat of Barry Goldwater in 64. So I also want to remind Democrats that sometimes a slap, you know, a shock to the system does cause a change of approach that can ultimately bear fruit, and we have to be thinking that way at this point. We have to be building for the future. But clearly, the Nixonian Southern strategy has played out to the benefit of the Republicans. What is the answer to it? I think it, again, is getting back to our strength, which is economics. There's a lot of working class and middle class Southerners who are not hearing a clear enough message from the Democratic Party on issues like jobs and health care, and they're not seeing consistency in the way that we govern. And I think bluntly, the constituencies of color in this party also are often wondering if they're not being taken for granted and are not seeing results. So I think there's a lot to be said here for recognizing what the Southern strategy led to, but not running from it, as opposed to engaging the constituencies in the South that we can win back.
What about the gender gap, which is pretty stark? You know, even in New York, which Kerry won with, 58% of the vote to 40%, there was a tie among white men between Bush and Kerry. Have you seen that?
No, I'm surprised by that.
That's a New York figure, unless this copy of the New York exit polls that I have is wrong, a misprint or something. It's within 1 point. White men in New York State voted for Kerry by 1 point more than they voted for George Bush, 50-49.
Well, I'm you have the figures. I don't. I find that a little surprising given the overall numbers. That would express an extraordinary high percentage of women in New York for Kerry. So I'd like to check those. But that being said,
and even here are the national numbers. Among white men, 61% voted for Bush to 38. Among white women, 54 voted for Bush to 45 for Kerry. So there's still a substantial gender gap there, too.
Yeah, but I think it gets back to the core issue. Why have white men gotten so alienated? I think it revolves back to the question of what have they not seen in the Democratic Party? Many, many of these folks grew up in Democratic households. I think you see a parallel dynamic among labor households, even labor union households, that we've had a lot of loss of loyal Democratic voting patterns there as well. I think it comes down to the fact that on the bread and butter issues, the Democratic Party has to do a better job.
Why the bread and butter issues? Because most of the analysis today is that, again, looking at the question in the exit polls of what was your most important issue, those who said moral values voted 80% for Bush. Those who said the economy or jobs voted 80% for Kerry.
Well, because my argument would be, first of all, I think this is a particular moment in history. I think national security is going to be much less of concern at other points, and fundamental economic issues always are a core concern. I think the quote-unquote values concerns, you know, ebb and flow. Look, the Democratic Party is and always should be pro-choice and will have a very strong constituency because of that. That can't change. That shouldn't change. And core belief in gun control can't change and shouldn't change, which doesn't mean we have to, look aside at the gun owners and make them feel alienated. I think there's ways, as Bill Clinton showed, to reach out to them while still staying true to our policies. But the place that we have the opportunity for constant growth is on the economic front, and we really didn't take advantage of it this time. It was not the core message of this campaign. In 92, when it was the core message, we were able to unseat an incumbent Republican who also had won with a majority vote in his previous election. So I think it's a pretty straightforward point. Where do we go? We go back to our strength.
Srini in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for your call. It was wonderful to listen to your 30 days and 30 shows.
Thank you.
And you spoke to the reporter from New Delhi yesterday, and you questioned him about the division in India, 50% Republicans, 50% Democrats. I myself is a journalist from India. I'm going back in 1975 after Indo-Pak War. Majority of the people rejected the Congress in the North, basically the same value or moral value of the Congress Party.
And supposedly Bush was supposed to be the candidate of terrorism. And obviously, as Srini reminds us, New York is the central city of 9/11. How do you explain it?
Well, I think it's fair to say that New York has its own reality as having been the chief victim of the 9/11 attack and also the chief victim of the economic decline afterwards. It's very hard for New Yorkers to feel, whether through a perspective of economics or national security or values, much faith that George Bush was looking out for their interests. I think it's very straightforward in that fashion. And it is not a surprise that people would have felt that they don't get a sense of security from the way the Bush administration treated New York before, during, or after the crisis.
And it's so different from the rest of the country, where those who listed terrorism as their number one issue voted 86% for Bush.
And the irony, of course, is that the reality is that we still remain one of the prime targets in many of the places that people were led to believe that they should be concerned, or places that probably never would be targets. But the fact is, the moral concerns, the value concerns, the national security concerns, there's a certain continuity between them. There's a certain sense of looking for something to hang on to in a difficult and complex world. But none of that, in my view, compares in people's minds to their own personal circumstances. If people are not secure about their economic dynamics, and they're not secure about their ability to get health care or their kids' education, that will move their vote more than any other abstract matter. And we've got to make clear to American people, with much clearer messages and much clearer achievements, that's what we are about. That's our central focus. And when the Democrats have done that, whether it's a Franklin Roosevelt or a Bill Clinton, that's when they've won.
We have Congressman Ferguson from New Jersey standing by, Bill de Blasio, city councilman from Brooklyn, chairman of the Hillary Clinton for Senate campaign in New York in 2000, and of the New York Edwards for President campaign during the primaries. Just tell me one thing before you go. How do you think this result affects the futures of any prominent New York politicians, particularly Giuliani, Hillary Clinton, George Pataki?
Well, it's much too early to tell. I would be careful for anyone to assume that this is a larger national realignment. I think this is a shock to the system. I think Democrats have to make some serious changes here. I think it certainly does mean there might be a Jeb Bush attempting a candidacy in the future. But in terms of how the Democrats respond to it, it's too early to tell. There's no question, though, that going forward we need candidates who are going to be much more aggressive and much more consistent on message. And I think that will go through the Democratic Party like a lightning bolt from this point on, that we've got to clean up our house on that front.
Councilman de Blasio, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you're just waking up or just joining us, Senator Kerry has conceded to President Bush in a telephone call and will be making a statement to the nation at 1 o'clock. Stay with us.